Evening had come, and they had found enough wood to make a fire. But an enemy would show on a view screen up in the sky. They made speeches. They were grateful to Johnny many times, and he was a welcome guest. Then it was Johnny's turn. He was flanked by a coordinator who knew Chinese and a monk who also knew Sherpa. Johnny had to speak in English for the Chinese-speaking coordinator and in Cyclo for the monk, and the monk had to translate into Sherpa or Tibetan or whatever it was, so it took a bit of time waiting, but not too much. After some pleasant responses to their speeches, Johnny got right down to it.
"I can't leave you here,"
he said, and pointed at the sky.
"And you can't leave any you have left at home."
Oh, they surely agreed with that. Johnny looked at their fire-lit faces as they sat in their different groups.
"It is cold in these mountains."
They certainly agreed with that, particularly the Chinese.
"There apparently isn't much food."
Oh, he was so very right. Lord Johnny was very perceptive, and he knew how thin their children were.
"There are ways you can help. Ways you can help to defeat the Cyclos, possibly forever, if they come back. Ways you can help defeat the aliens in the sky."
One could have heard a snowflake fall. It was so still. He thought they hadn't understood him. He opened his mouth to repeat. And this orderly throng became totally disorderly. Forgotten were manners. They surged forward. They pressed so tightly close to him, he had to stand up. Only one eager question was being roared at him now in at least three tongues.
"How? How can we help?"
These beaten people, these ragged, starved remnants of once great nations, had not really dreamed they could be of value, that they could assist, that they might have a role to play besides to hide and starve. It was a mind-shattering thought. To help. The coordinators and chiefs somehow got them back in their places around the fire, but they couldn't sit down. They were too excited. When Johnny could speak again, it was into a new stillness. But he suddenly realized he might have more audience than he intended. Could the visitors upstairs monitor this? Probably. He held a hurried consultation, low-voiced, with a senior coordinator. "Yes," the man whispered back. "There was a large hall beneath the palace. It had been cleaned out." Johnny spoke to Chief Monk Ananda. Wild-eyed with excitement, the Buddhists went into the hall. Johnny got a mind light from the plane. He closed the door. This was an atmosphere they loved. Johnny spoke to them very quietly. They spoke Cyclo. They spoke Pali, a dead language. They also spoke some tongue known as Tibetan. "Yes," they whispered back. Johnny told them he would see their library was flown out to a safe place. They could have a deep section of the Russian base for it, and their temple. But were they afraid of heights? They laughed. That was a silly question to ask mountain people. Did they mind being scattered all over the globe and living with other tribes? No, that was fine. They were not really withdrawn from the world just because they lived in a monastery. They had to live in the caves because of danger. He told them what a communicator was. If people gave them a message in Cyclo, they could put it on the radio in Pali, and the Buddhist at the other end could put it back into Cyclo. And the enemies upstairs would never understand. They thought it was marvelous. A whole worldwide Pali-speaking network. Yes, yes, yes. But now there was a sobering thought. At some time, one of them might be captured and made to give messages. And if so, they would give the message in Tibetan, and that was their secret. It was dangerous. All life was dangerous. They accepted every man, woman, and child of them, and accepted for the ones at home, too. Johnny tried to tell them their pay would be a credit a day, which was fair pay in most tribes, but he didn't get a chance. They would go, and that was that. And they knew it was secret, and they would tell nobody. They even tiptoed out the door.